Hello, everybody, and happy Sunday, happy Super Bowl Sunday. Today is another installment of our teaching series called Insights from the Wonderfully Weird. We're looking at the lives and the wisdom and the knowledge of two sets of people, of the mystics and the prophets. We did a prophet last week from the Old Testament named Joel. This week, we're looking at the life of a mystic named Hildegard of Bingen. And I like the fact that her name includes her location. So for the rest of the day, my name is Tim of West Eugene. So it's very nice to meet you, okay? Hildegard was born in 1098, a little while ago, in Germany. She was one of 10 children. There was no Netflix back there, so evidently they did other things. And the custom at the time was to give your 10th child to the church if you had 10 children, which evidently was a common practice in Germany in the 1000s, okay? And so Hildegard went to serve the church and became a nun at the ripe old age of 14. And she wrote a collection of amazing transcendent experiences with God, and we're going to read about some of them today. And she accomplished so much in her life. She wrote books, she created art, she made medical discoveries. She wrote the first book on gynecology from a woman's perspective ever at that time in history. And fun fact, she created her own language. I'm totally serious. She made up her own language, which we do as a kid, but she did as an adult, and it was a full language. She was a busy little nun. Today, I want to focus on three things from her writings, and they're three words: earth, art, and joy. First, I want to start with earth. Hildegard had a lot to say about our planet. She was like a hippie way before our time. If she lived right now, she would wear Birkenstocks, she would listen to the Grateful Dead, and go to the country fair like every year, okay? She was all into love and music and nature. Look at one of the things she writes about Earth. I'll put this quote on the board behind me. Every creature is a glittering, glistening mirror of the divinity. So you can see something of God in every creature in all of creation, okay? It's so true. When I look at some of the amazing creatures God has made, I really do see something of God in them. I want to show you two pictures as an example. The first one will pop up here. This is not a painting. This is an actual seahorse. My wife and I went to a seahorse farm where they rehabilitate seahorses in Hilo, Hawaii, if you're ever there. It's amazing. They are stunningly beautiful. This is a markhor. Okay, look at the antlers on this bad boy. If humans have antlers in heaven, I want that kind, okay? Because that's just spectacular. When I see these kinds of creatures, it actually makes me believe in God more. It makes me appreciate God more. Later on in her life, she wrote a book called The Book of Divine Works, and in it, she wrote this about Earth from God's perspective. So this is God talking. I gleam in the waters, and I burn in the sun, the moon, and the stars. With every breeze, as with the invisible life that contains everything, I awaken everything to life. Well, that's just awesome. And if you read that over and over, you'll see how awesome it is. So, to be in nature, according to Hildegard, is to be made more alive, and it's also to be awakened, like what we sang today, to the very real and very near presence of the Creator who inhabits creation. I was reading recently of a little boy named Oscar, 4 years old, and he went outside and he found a dried up old wasp nest that fell out of a tree or out of the eaves of the house or something. And he runs inside because he wants to show it to his mom. And he shows it to his mom, and he said the most amazing thing. He goes, "Look, Mom, something to make us think about God." That's incredibly insightful for any human of any age, let alone a four-year-old. Oscar gets it. God didn't just create the world. God is all up inside of the world. Bob Dylan, my favorite quote, shared it with you a lot. I'm going to share it with you again. He got it too. He was just like Oscar. He said this in one of his songs: "In the fury of the moment, I can see the master's hand in every leaf that trembles and in every grain of sand." God is all up in creation. Hildegard also wrote about taking care of the earth. Check this out, another quote from her. She writes, "If we fall in love with creation deeper and deeper, we will respond to its endangerment with passion. How far ahead of her time was she? She wrote this in the early 1100s. That's incredible. In a recent poll that came out I was reading, it said that people who consider themselves highly religious, like religion's a big part of their life, they pray, they go to church, they read the Bible, that same group of people were far less likely to be concerned with the environment. That's just sad, okay? And I think one of the main reasons for that has to do with bad theology, bad thinking about God. Many highly religious people think of God as up there, we're down here, therefore down here doesn't really matter. Yes, it does, because God is actually everywhere, okay? And many highly religious people that don't care about the earth don't realize that God is all about relationship. It's true. Read through the Bible from start to finish, and you'll realize that relationship is a major theme in the Bible. It might be the most major theme in the Bible. God wants us to be in right relationship with God, in right relationship to each other, and in right relationship to the planet. But all too often we neglect that last relationship, and it's not just hurting the environment, it's hurting us. It's hurting us. First of all, it hurts us because we miss out on so much healing when we don't have a right relationship with the planet. It is a consistently proven fact that connecting to the earth soothes the effects of trauma and helps alleviate anxiety. It is really true. It brings so much healing to connect to the earth. And I can attest to that. My friend who used to be my therapist, Jackie's not here today, but she told me this. I suffer from panic disorder, and I came into her office one day having a full-on panic attack. And if you've never had one, it doesn't mean you're just a little nervous. You think you're going to die or go crazy or both, okay? And there's times when anxiety gets the best of me and I start to spin. I don't know how to describe it. Some of you are nodding your head, you go, oh yeah, I know that feeling. It's like your insides are spinning and you feel like they're gonna have to haul you away in a rubber truck, okay? You just can't think right or do anything right. And she told me one of the best things you can do is to take off your shoes and socks and walk outside barefoot. And I thought, well, that sounds crazy, but I feel crazy, so why not? And so I did it. And it works. I even do it when it's freezing cold outside and raining. I take my socks and shoes off and I go walk outside and I get grounded to the earth, and it helps so much to alleviate my spinning. It heals me. I want to read you a poem from Mary Oliver, who, if you've not read her poetry, come on, okay, you've got to. She is fantastic. And this is a poem that's called When I Am Among Trees. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would also almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and I never hurry through the world, but I walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves, and they call out, "Hey, stay a while." The light flows from their branches, and they call again. It's simple, they say, and you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine. I absolutely love that poem, especially the line where she says, I would almost say that they save me, talking about the trees, and daily. We should do our best to save the planet, because in a very real way, the planet saves us too. I just finished a book by an Australian author, and I've read all of her books so far and will continue to do so. She's fantastic. And she talks about going through cancer, and she had two brutal bouts with cancer, with surgeries that sometimes lasted 24 hours in length and all different kinds of treatment, just brutal. And as she was going through her second bout of cancer, she was suffering physically, and she knew she needed to do something to help in her healing process. And because she lives in Australia, she decided to go snorkeling, not something I'd encourage you to do in Oregon to help with your healing, because you'll die, okay? But she went snorkeling, and she went to this beach that was famous for a current that runs along the beach called the Drift. And what happens is you get your snorkel on, and you go out over this amazing coral reef that's just full of life. and you get on one side and you catch the drift, and it carries you down a very long, like mile long stretch of beach, and it gives you the sensation that you're flying over the coral, because you don't even have to paddle or swim. You just fly over the coral. And she writes this about the experience. The glimpses of awe among the curious, colorful creatures of the reef were saving me. She writes the same thing that Mary Oliver did. That's amazing. Nature can do this. I want to end this point by showing you a remarkable image. It's a true image. It's not doctored. This is a before and after picture of a river in Asia. And this river cleanup was done by a group called the River Warriors. Get on their website. It'll do your heart good. They clean up rivers all over the world. They're such cool people. And if you are like me, the moment you saw that after part of that, it did your soul good, right? That's because the spiritual and the earthly aren't separate. They're connected. And to do good to the earth does good to us. And Hildebrand showed us that. So that's the first word, okay? The first word is earth. And we just need to get in touch with our inner hippie again. Second word is this, art. Hildebrand loved art. She wrote songs and poetry. She painted. She created plays. She was just crazy creative. I want to read you two quotes from her about art. First one is this, humankind full of creative possibilities is God's work. I'll explain that in a second. And then the second one, all the arts serving human desires and needs are derived from the breath of God sent into the human body. So, according to Hildebrand, she believed that God gave people all different kinds of artistic talents and abilities, and when they used those abilities to produce their form of art, they were actually doing the work of God. And I completely believe that because art helps people so much. I do not believe that art is a luxury in our time and day. I believe it's a necessity because of how much it helps people. First of all, think about this. Art helps people so much because art reminds all of us that there's still beauty and goodness in the world no matter what we're reading in the headlines, right? That's what art does for us. So it addresses our need for hope. That's why so many people, when they go to art museums, they talk about the museums as sacred spaces, because they are. It's why some of you go to concerts and you have these transcendent experiences and you say, ooh, that concert was a real God moment for me, because it was, because the Holy Spirit moves through people's art to bring us hope. I'll give you a couple of examples. The first one, I think I shared it like a couple of years ago in a sermon, but there's a guy named Vedran. He's from Bosnia, and he's a cellist, and he's actually called the cellist of Sarajevo because during the Bosnian War, if you study that, it was an awful, brutal, bloody, violent conflict. His country, Bosnia, was filled with so much despair and anger and hurt and sorrow, especially after one day when a stray bomb struck a group of innocent people who were waiting in line to receive free bread and killed 22 of them. And he was overwhelmed with despair, and so he decided he needed to do something to bring the people hope. So he decided to do 22 separate concerts, solo concerts by himself, one concert for each of the people that lost their lives. And he did the concerts right in the middle of the buildings in Bosnia that had been bombed out. Here's an image of him giving one of the concerts. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Can you even imagine how much hope that brought the people in that town when he did that? More recently, right in the midst of all the pain and angst and confusion that many of us are experiencing, there's a young artist, and her name is Maisie Matilda. Is that not one of the greatest names of all time? Maisie Matilda, if we were gonna have another child, Maisie, that would be the name, okay? That is just a fantastic name. Well, she does something amazing with her art. She takes well-known novels and presses them in a vise so that the pages are squeezed really tightly together, and then she creates paintings on the edges of the paper, and they're scenes from the book. I'll show you two. That's stunning, and the pictures aren't doing it the justice it deserves. This one's obviously from Lord of the Rings, that's Gandalf, and this one is from Harry Potter, okay? And oh my gosh, when I see, when I watch, when I hear, when all of us see, watch, and hear artistic works, it reminds us there's still goodness and beauty in the world, and it brings us hope. Remember the pandemic? Remember that? Okay, especially the early weeks when we were bleaching our groceries and making masks out of our old t-shirts and all that, and we were just freaking out and we were desperately searching for hope. Where did we turn? We turned to art, didn't we? We watched dozens of creative movies and shows on Netflix. We laughed at funny videos that people created. We listened to so much music in genres that we'd never even tried before during the pandemic. Some of us got tattoos. Some of us learned to cook. I did, and that's a form of art. Some of us just watched other people cook on the Great British Baking Show. Okay, we watched like every season of that. In our darkest days, art was given to us to bring us hope, to rekindle our hope. A second benefit of art is this. Art actually inspires us to be better people. Martin Luther King Jr. said the famous phrase, "Violence begets more violence. Violence gives birth to more violence." And we've seen that play out over the last few years in our world. It's so true. One act of violence will just bring another. It won't stop it. It'll bring another. But the opposite is also true. Beauty begets more beauty. No wonder the Bible is filled with artistic writings and poems and songs and stories, because the beauty of those artistic endeavors help us to be more beautiful people. The famous author C.S. Lewis, I'm going to reshare a quote I used from him too, because he says it so well. Look what he writes about this. "We do not want merely to see beauty. We want something else which can hardly be put into words, to be united with the beauty we see, to pass into it, to receive it into ourselves, to bathe in it, to become part of it." What he's saying there is when we see beauty, when we experience the beauty of art, we don't want to just look at it. We have a strong desire to enter into it. And in the process of entering into the beauty, we become more beautiful people in the process. And lastly, the great thing that art does for us is sometimes it just puts a smile on our face when we need to laugh. There's an artist named Guillermo Galletti, and he's from Argentina, and he takes people's scrap metal and he makes sculptures out of them, and they're ridiculous. They serve no purpose. They're ridiculous. I'm going to show you a video. There's no sound to it on purpose. Look at his sculptures. Let's play this. Don't you just like him already? Look at the rocker. Yeah. The raptor following him. Okay, I forgot this guy, the shoveler. It's just ridiculous. It is just ridiculous, okay? I watched this over and over this week. I might have had a little too much time on my hands this week, but it's so ridiculous. I probably watched this 5 times because most of them serve no purpose at all other than just to make people smile. All right, that's enough of that word. Let's move on to joy, which is connected to that. Hildebrand had some great things to say about joy. Look what she writes about joy. She writes, "Be not lax in celebrating. Be not lazy in the festive service of God. Be ablaze with enthusiasm. Let us be an alive, burning offering before the very altar of God." Hildebrand's saying, hey, don't just be joyful when you feel like it. Get after joy on a daily basis. Don't be lax in celebrating. And it's so similar to what the Apostle Paul writes in the book of Philippians chapter 4 when he says to the church and to all of us, "Rejoice in the Lord always." Not when you feel like it, always. Again, I say rejoice. And this sounds great, doesn't it? To be ablaze with enthusiasm, to not be lax in celebrating, to rejoice always, that just sounds fantastic. And it also sounds impossible to me. Can I just be honest with you? Because there are some days when I wake up and then for some reason I just channel my inner Eeyore and I go through the day just with an attitude of, oh, woe is me, everything's wrong in my life, and I gripe all day. I can't seem to engage my rejoicing mechanism. But here's the thing. Paul writes that phrase, rejoice in the Lord always, to a group of people, not to an individual. We Americans, we read that and we think he writes it just to us. No, he writes it to a group of people, not an individual. So I may not be able to rejoice all the time, but we can rejoice all the times. On the days I can't seem to rejoice, you get to rejoice for me and vice versa. So as a group, we are not lax in celebrating because at least one of us is doing some rejoicing during that day. So we have to achieve that as a group. Plus, we are connected, far more connected than we even know. Our love for each other connects us. Our prayers for each other connects us with one another. The Spirit of God that's alive inside of us connects us. All of those things act like threads that bind us together. So on the days that I go all Eeyore, but you choose to rejoice, you're rejoicing. This is going to sound all woo-woo, but it's not too woo-woo. It's like the right amount of woo, okay? But on the days where I go all Eeyore and you are rejoicing, your rejoicing reaches through those threads and lifts me up. We're that connected. And on the days you're Eeyore, my rejoicing will do the same for you. It's like we're the spiritual equivalent of the three musketeers, all for one and one for all. It's actually really true. When one of us wins, somehow we all win. Hildebrand also wrote this about joy. The song of rejoicing softens hearts. Singing summons the Holy Spirit. Happy praises offered in simplicity and love lead to faithful and complete harmony amongst people. Don't stop singing. That's what she writes. Put a comma there. I'll come back to this thought. But I want to talk about the Olympic sport of curling first. If you've never, I know that's a big leap for you, okay? But if you've never seen curling, the first time I watched it, it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. What happens is they're on a long lane of ice. You can't see the whole lane, but they're on a long lane of ice, like a bowling alley, but it's made of ice. And one person kind of tosses this shiny, pretty stone down the lane towards a target at the end. But then seemingly out of nowhere, two people come out with brooms and busily sweep down the aisle as they're going. And the first time I watched, I go, what's with the sweepers? What are they doing? Why don't they just get out of the way? It looks like the stone's sliding along the ice. It looks like the ice is just fine. Is this like a sport for anal retentive people? We're just going to go out there and clean. We just have to have it clean, okay? Actually, it turns out the sweepers are important. I had to look this up, okay? They create heat, which melts the ice clumps in front of the stone so the stone can more easily glide along the ice towards the target, which is called, I kid you not, the house. That's what the target is called. So what do the sweepers do? They help the stone go home. That's what the sweepers do. They're actually quite important. It can be so tempting in our life to think, why do we bother singing in church? Why bother rejoicing? Is it really that important? Yes, our rejoicing is as important in our lives as the sweepers are to curling. See how I tied those things together. Hildebrand listed a few things in that last quote I read you of why we should rejoice. First of all, it softens our heart so they don't get all hardened with cynicism and bitterness and anger. Second of all, it connects us more intimately to the Spirit of God, and that's always a good thing. And thirdly, it helps human beings to live in harmony. Try it. It is very difficult to rejoice in the Lord and be a jerk to the person next to you. You just can't do it. Rejoicing actually does lead to harmony. And I want to add one more thing to Hildebrand's list. Rejoicing is so important because it's an act of defiance. Whenever we sing in here and we rejoice, we're saying to the gloom and darkness around us, you don't get to win. You don't get to win. I know you get headlines, but you don't get to win. Joy wins. Love wins. God wins. You don't win. So we need to do what Hildebrand says and never stop singing. I'm going to invite Pete to come back up here and Brandy to come back up here. Brandy's going to give us a few quick announcements. And then I thought, you know what? We talked about art today and hope. Pete is going to lead a song, just share a song with us that's from a bluegrass band that I came across. Yes, I listen to bluegrass sometimes. I'm a rocker, but bluegrass is cool. And they're called the Red Clay Strays, okay? And there's a song that they wrote called, they're not a Christian group, but they wrote this song called God Does. And so what better way to finish our time together than to have an artist send us off by introducing us to hope again.
Days the devil baits us, sees if I will bite. A lot of times it feels like I just can't do right, but I know that God does. I know that God does. Some days waking up for me alone is such a chore. Sometimes I don't have the strength to go on anymore, but I know that God does. I know that God does. Whenever I'm lacking, it's He who makes me whole. Shining through the darkness and cleaning out my soul. I'm fighting daily battles, on Him I can depend. When I open up my heart and let Him in. When the temperature's rising, patient in thin. Don't have what it takes to cool back down again, but I know that God does. But I know that God does. When the rain just keeps pouring and I can't see the road, even with a map sometimes I don't know where to go, but I know. Yeah, I know that God does. Whenever I'm lacking, it's He who makes me whole. Shining through the darkness, steaming out my soul. While I'm lighting daily battles, to Him I can depend. When I open up my heart, let Him in. When I lie awake at night, fed up with myself, I wonder if I'm good enough, me or someone else. Well, I know that God does. Well, I know that God does.